Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Happy New Year's from the ground level, everyone. Today's episode is a recorded interview I had with a Northwest legend, John Curley. He's the host of the John Curley Show on 97.3 Cairo FM in Seattle. I've been a huge fan of his for years, and he's been a great inspiration. He was gracious enough to spend a little time with me on New Year's Eve, so stay tuned. All right, everyone, this is Sean with The Ground Level. Just hours away from 2026. That's a very exciting episode for me today. Before we get there, please remember to follow us at rumble.com and The Ground Level. You can catch us at Apple and Spotify. You know, like, share, and comment. We're very new to this podcast world, and you can help us grow. If you're from the Pacific Northwest, you're more than likely have heard of him. For me, he's a man with a very fascinating catalog of life experiences. He's a famous auctioneer. He hosted the Evening Magazine back in the day. And of course, he's the host of John Curley at Cairo 97.3 in Seattle. John, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Sean. Happy New Year to all your loved ones.
As I'm looking forward to this, 2025 has been a lot of fun. You know, just jumping right into it, your show particularly has always been a favorite of mine for quite some time. You know, to me, you bring great insight and entertainment to our region. Well-deserved. We need it. The Tom Tangney days, the Dave Ross arguments, debates, if you will, alongside, of course, with Dory Monson, God rest his soul. I mean, he was such a great part of our society here in Western Washington. And as you know, I've even called in over the years, being stuck in our 405 or I-5, whichever it is. I've chatted with you a few times. One thing that has always carried on my mind over the years, being stuck in those hours on my way to Bellevue, is, you know, how did you get into broadcasting? Is it something you felt passionate about early on, or is it something just because of the way you navigated through life in general, you just kind of fell into broadcasting?
Yeah, that's, Sean, I would say that's it. I fell into it. I never thought I would ever amount to anything. I failed fourth grade twice. I think my eighth grade, I drove to school the last couple of months, which it's great because you can get a firstie. There's no other eighth graders that are struggling to find a parking spot. I could grow a beard, so I played Joseph in the Christmas pageant, and then I was Jesus at Easter with the beard. That was probably, I think I peaked in eighth grade. And then through just a series of really crazy, I tell the story to my kids, and they're always like, oh, I'm going to do the same thing you did, Dad. I'm like, no. I couldn't get into college because I cheated on my SATs. I cheated off of this guy. And then they called us into the principal's office and asked, did you let him cheat? And my buddy said, no, even though he did. I didn't want him to take the fall. So, and when they say, you can't cheat on your SATs. Oh, yeah, you can. So here's how they catch you. Just anybody wants to try to do it. So if you're... they do a block. So the person sitting to the right of you, front of you, behind you, they take the block. So I scored combined, I think like six, first time I took it, combined 640. And then the next time I took it, because I sat next to this buddy of mine who just whispered the answers, I think I went from like 640 to 1100. And if you jump more than 200 points, then they assume there's no way you go from, you know, basically... the score of a sea urchin to a sentient human being. They're like, this guy cheated. So I got a letter from the Scholastic Aptitude Testing Center in Princeton, New Jersey, saying, although we didn't see him cheat, we believe he cheated. And every time you'd send an application out to a college, I think Harvard was my backup school.
How cool.
Yeah. They would just send you a letter back. It was a very thin envelope just saying no. so I just did all a bunch of crazy stuff. I decided, well, I could, my counselor in high school said, you can get into college if you get into a conservatory. Conservatories are fine arts. Do you sing, dance? Do you do art? Do you play any musical instruments? No. How about theater? I said, no. I don't want to be in there with those weirdos in high school. And he said, well, you could maybe. I thought, okay, I'll apply to Ithaca College because they have a theater department, Bachelor of Fine Arts. And I went to the library and I just filled out this application saying I was in all these plays. Then I went to New York with no idea what I was doing. I auditioned for like these seven people that are sitting behind on this big, big building. Sorry about that. And they're sitting behind the big table and I'm in this giant ballroom and I just did this monologue and the guy's like, how did you get all these lead roles? Cause you're not very good. And then I just told him, I said, I'm a horrible student. This is the only way I can get into college. Cause I don't want to pump gas in Philadelphia for a living. And my father graduated from Wharton and my sister got into schools. My brother was top of his class. And I just thought, this is my only way in. I just kind of BS my way in. And I got in. I got in and I looked at the application when I got to college. The guy had left my application sitting on the table when he went out to go get a cup of coffee and I read it. And it was like, there was all my crap I put on there. And then down the bottom, it said blonde hair, blue eyes, strong jawline, not gay, accepted. So they let me in. And then I was like, all right, I guess as long as I have blonde hair, blue eyes, and a strong jawline, and don't sleep with a guy, I can stay in this college. And I was like, I'm in. I'm an actor.
It worked.
It worked. And then I was so full of myself, Sean, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to New York and make it now. And that is here's why I went to New York. So one night, I walk by this professor's office. It's like 11 at night. He's in there smoking a pipe. He's got the big, you know, sweater on and the beard and the little glasses. And he's like, come here. I want to talk to you. So I come in there and he goes, look, I've been here for 30 years. You have it. You've got it. I go, what's it? He goes, you have it. You can make it. You can make it. You should go to New York. Every day you're here, you're wasting your time. There's two buses that leave for New York City. One at 9 o'clock in the morning and one at 3 in the afternoon. Get on the 9 o'clock and go to New York. You're going to make it. You're going to be a huge star. You should go to New York. I was like, really? Absolutely. Let me tell you something. Every minute you're here, you're wasting your time. You're going to be a giant star. I was like, wow, this guy's got a beard and glasses and he's got a big sweater and he must know what he's talking about.
So cool.
I leave. I go to New York and I'm bumbling around. I'm not making it. I'm working as a waiter. So I call back to talk to the professor to get like some help from him. Like, why haven't I made it yet? And they put the I guess he's the dean of the theater department on the phone. He goes, where are you? And I said, I'm in New York. I said, Dr. Carter told me to go to New York. And he goes, oh my God. I said, is he there? Can I talk to him? He's not well. He's on sabbatical. I said, what do you mean he's not well? Is he sick? He's had a mental breakdown. So apparently this guy was telling a whole bunch of people to go to New York. And I was like the only one. So I hang up the phone. I realize I'm in New York City on the advice of a madman. Like, this guy was mentally ill. And I'm like, holy shit, and I was like, why am I here? Like, then I wanted to go back. My dad's like, I'm not sending you back. And then I thought, anyway, one thing leads to another. I get a job selling medical supplies. And then I go to Edinburgh, Scotland. I get cast in a play in Scotland with George Takei's there. And George Takei from Star Trek and I become friends. And one night I told him, I don't want to sell medical supplies anymore.
This is so great.
Yeah, I don't want to sell medical supplies. What should I do? And he's like, oh, you should become a TV weatherman. You don't have to know anything about the weather. You can wear makeup and suits. It would be a great job for you. It would be consistent acting. So I went back and I applied for a job in Grand Junction, Colorado, and they accepted me. And I got the job there, and then I made my way all the way to I made it to Washington, D.C. And TV, you keep moving up markets if you're any good. So I started at like $9,600 a year till I made it to Washington, D.C. within 2 years. But I lived in like five other cities. And then I see George Takei when they're putting the Smithsonian is accepting William Shatner's chair in there. And I saw George. I said, "Hey, George, it's Curly." "Oh, my God, what are you doing here?" I said, I took your advice. I became a weatherman." "Oh, did I tell you to be a weatherman?" I said, "Yes, yes. Tell me you're not insane. I followed your advice." So I went from there. William Morris Agency picked me up and moved me to Seattle. I did Evening Magazine for 15 years, and then they fired me. And then Cairo Radio, Don O'Neill. Remember Don O'Neill? Don? Don knew me. He said, "That guy can tell stories. Let's get him on the radio." So they put me on the radio in, I think, 09 or something. And that's how I started here. So I've been in Cairo now. Like, I think I'm the oldest dude here now. I'm like 16 years or something. So that's cool. The story.
That is so awesome. I mean, and I can relate to a certain degree. I mean, you know, never to your, you know, the development level of your, you know, expertise and all this, but I can relate to where I've traveled around, you know, and you fall into these weird situations. And I was in Colorado, and I was actually in New York alongside you. And I was in, you know, just everywhere. I've been in DC. I lived in West Virginia, did all these cool things in my youth. Yeah. And I was just kind of traveling around, and then, you know, life happens, and you build a family, and you start finding your niche.
Yeah.
And this is why, you know, it's been always been so fascinating how well you do at radio. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, because again, I completely appreciate your time, and I know how valuable it is. And a couple things I wanted to ask you, you know, I've listened to you for a long time, and to kind of get on more of a serious note, the stage of Washington State right now just seems to be in shambles. And we've watched this. One of the things that I think you probably agree with, it seems like a certain political demographic, we'll just say it like that, knows how to capture words. For example, you know, progressive, we'll just use that word.
Sure.
The word progressive, it seems we've progressively, right? That's always a positive thing. But we've watched progressively them really capture and just destroy our country in so many ways with excess taxation, corruption, you know, Gregoire, Inslee, Ferguson, all these things that we've watched for the past 10, 15 years at minimum. And what I wanted to ask you is, you know, with all this rage going on, and especially in a deep, deep blue state, do you think, and this is the important question for me, because I've never really gotten that from you from when you're doing your radio show. How do you think we got to this point? Do you think it's pure corruption, mismanagement, or a combination of both?
Everyone acts in their own self-interest. That's number one. And because of that, people begin to realize, what can I do in my own self-interest to benefit me without regard for anyone else? That's just natural human instinct.
Sure.
In the state of Washington, the unions, acting their own self-interest, have bought the politicians.
Correct.
And the politicians then in return provide the bennies, the benefits, to special interest,
right,
in order to be elected. So in a state where it's the trifecta, where you have the governor, you've got the House and the Senate, and these people are going to continue to provide benefits to the special interest so that they can all keep their job. And that's the stranglehold. And it happens again in Republican states as well.
Sure.
Where you could take a place like Utah, where if you're not Mormon, you're not elected, right?
100%.
Right. But then in that state, they don't have, if you look at their property taxes, but they've got great growth. They don't consider themselves to be progressive. They really see family as number one, meritocracy number two. You know, there are a few things that they cut certain people out, but
sure.
In that regard, you know, the special interest, if they were considering themselves progressive, they see progressive or liberal, they see themselves shut out in Utah. in the state of Washington, the trifecta is in place where you've got the Democrats controlling everything and the unions controlling everything. You will not see another Republican elected to the governorship in Washington until Washington becomes a right-to-work state, which will probably never happen.
Sure.
So they have a stranglehold on us, and it's really sad. It's I was thinking about it today. It's tragic, just tragic for the common man or woman to have to be saddled with all of these taxes that just slowly destroy their ability to pay the bills. And then what the folks in Olympia do, say, don't worry, we'll give you more stuff. So they buy votes. And they just take more money. Now they realize, oh, we're going to get it from the millionaires and stuff. But I don't know.
It's just a complete facade. I mean, it's just such a ruse.
It is.
It's ridiculous.
It's so sad. It is so the gas tax, that CCA thing, and then now they're going to increase for paid family leave. They're going to now take more money out of everybody's paycheck. But even like here's a perfect example: the family leave thing. Who benefits from that? Rich people, elites, because they're the only ones that can take 4 weeks off or 6 weeks off. The guy who's hanging drywall, he doesn't take any time off.
100%.
He probably didn't have any kids. And if he does have kids, he can't get time off. But the money comes out of his paycheck every week, every month, in order to pay for rich people to be able to spend more time with their kid. Like, that's an example of, that's the poor in our society paying for the luxury for the rich. And it's just awful. And some days I 2 years ago, Sean, I wanted to quit because like you, I was so just depressed by the toxicity of this stuff. And I decided rather than quitting, cause I don't really need the job. I make a lot of money doing auctions. Rather than doing that, I thought I'm going to just sort of try to not be as emotionally dragged down by it. But there are days that it just crushes me. I try to point at the hypocrisy and try to get some of these people on the air and interview them. Nobody will come on. Nope. And we call Chris Rakedahl. Hey, Chris. Oh,
don't
he's not
even
coming
started.
On. but it's interesting. Katie Wilson, the new mayor of Seattle, she's going to come on the show on Monday.
Wonderful.
And I like talking to her. And I don't like to attack her, but you just like to ask questions. And often they just don't even have the answers because they don't even look underneath, you know, what their policies want to do. Does that make sense?
It does. And in fact, that's a great point you bring up because I've been to, you know, some of the situation that I've been going through over the past several years with Tacoma and the city council. And I've been to so many city council meetings and trying to, you know, raise just going, what is going on here? But I've watched so many times and I think you know where I'm coming from. It feels like the concept that the government is our employees is gone. And when I go to the city council meetings and I watch the people behind me walk up before me and they go, thank you, honorable members, for giving me a moment of your time. And I look at everybody and I go, hold on a second. These are your employees. What are you talking about? And in fact, remind me, weren't you, I think you were also on the city council of Sammamish, correct?
I was. Yep.
So I've noticed at many of these council meetings that I've just kind of, now this is over the years, of course, but it's always the city council's on an elevated platform. You're at a podium looking up to them begging for their forgiveness. And it drives me, this is not a family friendly show. It drives me batshit crazy. And so I sit there and watch this stuff and I've gone, hold on a second. I knock on the podium, eyes up front. We should all be respectful of each other.
Yeah.
But last time I checked, the people are the employer. And it seems that's been lost now. And I guess ultimately, you know, I've been fighting the city of Tacoma for so many years. To your point exactly, you become exhausted, and I'm reminded, you know, I'm a Gen X, I'm 50 years old, and I start going, okay, look, I've got an expiration date. How much energy do I really want to invest in this? I'm trying to take care of my family, my sons with tennis and golf and their careers and their futures. I love them more than I love, you know, watching the dismantling of our state. And it's sad, but you've nailed it. It's so sad at the same time that we've reached this point. And I guess my follow-up, a couple other questions I have for you is that, you know, as we've already, you know, mentioned, I've spoken with you, I've spoken with Jason Rantz and Dory, those, and even what was the Undivided?
Yeah, Brandi Cruz.
Brandi Cruz. You know, we've all talked, and it's like, I guess, you know, because this, who you guys are in a different world of unimaginable to me levels of political information being thrown at you all day. You do this for a living, you know, and I get frustrated just watching when you know what's happening. Cause I was union member, like you mentioned earlier, for 15 years. And I appreciate the unions, but I can also see the corruption. You know, it's kickbacks and working with legislators and all this kind of thing and lobbyists and all that kind of stuff. But with this nonstop growing radical left ideologies, you know, the massive continuing taxation, we always create a problem, you know, the industrial complex of homelessness and drug addiction. Do you think, and I asked Jason Rantz actually a while ago about this, and I would love to hear what you think. Do you see in any way a light at the end of the tunnel, a spark of maybe things are starting to turn around? Because it seems no matter what size of bullhorn we have in the Washington state, you know, you've seen on the news, you know, what's going on in Minnesota, the daycares and all this kind of things. Do you think there's any chance in the near future of Washington kind of turning around to some kind of sensible legislation? Are people getting frustrated enough to start truly pushing back? And why doesn't the federal government see what's going on in our state?
I know that's a loaded question. Yeah, no. That's good. The federal government sees. So I've been studying cities that got destroyed and what happened to those cities. Like, for instance, Detroit.
Detroit? Yes. I was just going to say.
So Detroit, here's quick history. And so in 1967, five guys go into this place called the Hurricane. It's a bar. The cops, there was a lot of racism back then. And the cops end up arresting these guys. I don't know for what reason. And then it starts these fires. And these fires burn for like 3 or 4 days. There's riots. There's entire blocks are just burned to the ground. There's snipers. The police are there. I think the National Guard might go in. And what happens is there was white flight already occurring in Detroit.
Okay.
Workers were moving out. The tax base was going down. This thing just, it was a tinderbox, just exploded. And at that point, the city of Detroit just went into deep decline. There was no tax base. The city tried to increase taxes to provide services. And then Dave Bing, who used to play for the Sixers, becomes the mayor of Detroit. And then he looks at the entire city, which was really big at the time. And he goes, look, let's just section off, let's annex off big chunks of this and just be able to have enough money to pay for this part. And as we become more financially solvent, we'll expand out and go get these other places. The state of Washington, if it continues the way it's going, because people ultimately vote, Sean, with their feet, you'll have more and more people leave, right? And there just won't be the tax base to provide all of these services. But it really depends upon the people voting. They've got to get rid of the Democrat, progressive people that believe they know better than anybody else. And they have this Marxist view of oppressed oppressor, that the employer's the bad guy, the landlord's the bad guy.
Right.
That those are the bad, and we're going to go get the bad guys to make things better for everybody else. Until the voters, and this is the saddest part, most Republicans and independents don't bother voting. They feel like their vote doesn't matter. So they don't show up. They don't register. You can't find good candidates. They just, if you have an R next to your name in the state of Washington and you run for office, you're done. If you stand on top of the Space Needle, you have to get, if you're a Republican, you got to get every single house. You got to get every single vote. You got to get them all, like 38% in King County, if you're going to get anywhere. And if you can't, you're done. You can win every other, you know, section. But if you don't get that, you don't get it. So as long as you have elite, rich people voting for their own self-interest and screw everybody else, they'll continue to have those people in there. Like, they, And they're being educated in our colleges to be taught that America's a horrible country, white people are horrible people, you know, there's racism everywhere. So they vote with that mindset, and they put their people in there. So what will happen to the state of Washington? I don't know. I try to see.
I'm glad to hear you say that, honestly.
I don't know how you get out of it, Sean. I mean, right now, they're going to run out of people. As Margaret Thatcher says, socialism's great until you run out of other people's money. They're going to run out of other people's money. I endorsed Katie Wilson, and people here got mad at me.
Interesting.
I endorsed her. Let's see socialism. They say it's going to work. She's a socialist, proud. She's not hiding it. Let's see. Let's see if it works. Let's see if they can get the golden goose to keep laying these eggs and keep redistributing all this wealth. But then probably, unfortunately, the golden goose has got wings and can just fly away. So let's see what happens. But
if I can ask, is that the kind of the concept of the give fuel to let it fail to see if it will? Okay.
Yes. Let's see. Hey, maybe it'll work. History proves it won't unless you'll murder 100 million people.
Right.
But hey, go ahead. Good luck. Good luck, Katie Wilson. Go get it.
Did you say that you're chatting with her this week?
Yeah, on Monday. She's coming on Monday,
That's fantastic. Yeah, you and I align on the same thing. I've reached a point in my life where I'm just like, I want to be left alone. I want to take care of my family. And now, one last thing, because there's a very important question that I'll hope you'll indulge me in. But one thing is, do you think that, like you said, we don't know where we go from this. But do you think this has been by corrupt design? And by that, I mean, is that, you know, there's so much corruption, I fear, like our voting systems. I know people that were on board with Culp, and I go, yeah, he had some momentum. And those are just diehards. You know, it was stolen. I don't think that was the case. But do you think with our like mail-ins and all that kind of stuff, I mean, do you think that our voting system is on that teeter-totter of being corrupt?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because it's based on the honor system. You go in, you get a driver's license, they automatically register you vote. Now, whether that person who shouldn't be voting is actually going to take that ballot and vote, who knows? But they've written the laws in such a way to benefit themselves. Is it corruption? Is it malicious corruption? No. I think here's how people justify it. The ends justify the means. Let's get Donald Trump off the ballot in Colorado and these other places. Let's impeach him. Drag him through the courts. Why? Because the ends justify the means. It's the old, would you smother baby Hitler in the crib? Yes, because the ends justify the means. We can't have this. So yes, listen, if we have this thing or this way, if we sort of tilt it that way, it's okay. Because the ends will justify the means, because ultimately in the end, it's a battle of oppressed oppressor. I know a lot of elected officials. When I was elected official, I got to tell you, the people that run for these offices, it's a big ego thing. They think they're smarter than they are. They sit up there and they also believe they're better or more caring or more sensitive. And they're more than willing to spend somebody else's money to fulfill their own virtues and values. It's not malicious. It's more ignorance. And it's unfortunate that they get this amount of power. They just don't have respect for the fact that it's not your money, and just fill the potholes, arrest the bad guys, and get out of all that other crap that you're trying to do. And just have government function at the basic levels and allow everybody else to do their own stuff, like you say, Sean. Let me just take care of my family. I'll pay my taxes. Just don't let me get robbed. And don't let me break the suspension on the front of my truck. Fill the potholes.
Correct.
Right? You're living it. You live it every day because of the crap that goes on. I mean, you've been involved in this. You've been fighting City Hall and the county for like 2 years. I tell your story all the time, and it's just you, along with hundreds of thousands of other people with the same crap, dealing with an insensitive government that, you know, your voice isn't loud enough and you don't have enough power.
Well, and as you know, without getting into the details, the situation I've been in going for, you know, in 2 years at minimum, but 6 years, the noise I've made over it, it blows me away. Just the, well, there's always a, you know, remember earlier when we were mentioning about language, well, they're not drug users. It's a lifestyle choice. They're always manipulating the language, and it drives me batshit crazy, especially with the, you know, for example, and not, I mean, this is not part of our conversation, not to get into it at all, but I mean, for example, pedophiles. Well, they're not pedophiles. They're minor attracted persons.
Yes.
They master twisting up language to disarm people that would otherwise call that shit out. And it just, it drives me crazy.
Right. George Orwell talks about that.
100%.
Right. Remember old speak, new speak.
Yes.
You want to reduce the number of words that the person can use to express an idea
so
that the
you.
Idea cannot be expressed, right?
In my little stint, if you will, in college, I only did a couple of years in college, but George Orwell, I was so fascinated by him. And you probably read Shooting an Elephant.
Yep.
That was one of the most, it moved me because it opened my eyes to the world. And, you know, I'm so glad to hear you say that somebody's aligned with, you know, I don't know either. What do we do from this point on? Do I leave the state? Do I pack my family up and go get out of here? But one last quick question, but I get it.
Yeah.
I have to ask a question about a very fun story that was for me that has carried me over the years. Before that, I wanted to ask, do you think, in fact, because you're in that world, does the federal government really truly see what's going on in our state? Why does it seem like, in your opinion, that we just get ignored? Or am I just not seeing what you see because you're in that world?
Well, I would recommend a book to all of your listeners and viewers. Ken Buck, congressman from Colorado, served for a number of years. He finally got so sick of it, he walked out, I think, last year in March, didn't finish his term. And this is before Trump was using that term. It might have been just kicked around a little bit, but it's a book called Drain the Swamp.
Right.
And I got to tell you, it is the most depressing book as Ken Buck walks you through the corruption of Washington, D.C. It is just pathetic. And I want to have him on, but I can't find him. He's just gone off completely off the radar. But he talks about how Republicans and Democrats, everyone just going along to get along, and you don't complain because they'll just screw you. And that you just realize how corrupt the system is. The answer to your question about Washington State, it all depends on the power and the money. So we've got Microsoft, you've got Weyerhaeuser, you've got Boeing, right?
Correct.
Three of the big employers. How much money are we talking about? How much is going to the federal government? How many jobs are related to it? And then each one of those congressmen and senators just trying to protect that crap, like our federal bank, the ridiculous bank that Boeing, they call it the Boeing Bank.
Right,
just
right.
Carve outs for everybody. It's just all about, you know, people feathering their own nest. And it's as long as the federal government continues to grow, taking more and more money and special interests getting more of that money, I don't know what happens. Although there's an interesting article that all republics within 250 years fail, whether it's Rome, whether it's
sure.
the UK, the United States is about is right ready to go to fail. There's no
a
way
very we can young experiment.
We can't have $40 trillion in debt.
Right.
We can't have it. It's going to blow up and it's going to fail. We'll be right back to where the UK is with a giant welfare state. And as long, and then as to quote Ben Shapiro, or it might have been Ben that said, when you import, I know, Douglas Murray, when you import the third world, you become the third world. If you have immigrants that come in with third world values, eventually you become a third world country.
Especially if they have no intent of assimilation at all. And that's what's lost our nation.
They don't need to.
Right.
You don't need, what are you assimilating into? You're assimilating into a racist, misogynistic, yeah. transphobic society. Like,
right.
why would you want to assimilate?
Exactly.
Right?
100%.
Yeah.
I'd
say something positive. Here's the positive thing for me, Sean, is that I read a book called 4,000 Weeks, and that's the lifespan of a human being. And every Monday, I have a calendar, and every Monday, I go to the calendar, and I fill in the little box. That's
Do you really?
I've lived. So I have this many weeks. I've got 827 weeks left in my life.
Okay.
And that's
I love it, man. No, I just said earlier about the expiration date. I've, I think as I get older and you begin, you know, maturity is really kicking in and you really see the, okay, you know, I can only do what I can do. My energy needs to be really conserved at this point because time is a candle in which we all burn. And I really want to preserve as much as I can, but you know, John, I know your time is valuable and I can't thank you enough, but I will sincerely hope that you'll tell this story because this is my favorite story
of
all time on the John Curley Show.
Oh boy.
And I'm just going to set it up as this, a Manhattan parade. Oh, Jennifer Aniston and the clown, please tell us.
Okay, so it wasn't Jennifer Aniston. It was Andrew McArdle. So I'm going way back. Andrew McArdle was the first Annie in the Broadway show Annie.
Oh, okay. I got that wrong. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
So I tried to ask her out. I went to her play a number of times. She was in a play when she was in high school. And I tried to ask her out. I delivered flowers. I even had the principal of my high school write a letter to the principal of that high school.
Okay.
And I'm
laughing because I know where this is going.
and he wrote the letter saying, I'm a little weird, but I'm harmless. And all he wants to do is meet Andrea. So I go backstage after her high school performance. I'm in high school. I knock at the door. I go to give her the flowers. And she curses me out. Like, I mean, I haven't heard words like that ever. And she slams the door in my face. And all I wanted to do was like go out, like date her, right? Where that
yeah,
was
yeah.
Senior year of high school. So then like a year goes by. Now a friend of mine's father was the director of the Macy's Day Parade. And she says, do you want to march in the Macy's Day Parade? Oh, yeah. So I'm in New York City. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I get my clown costume on. I go there. There's like 800 clowns and we all have a little badge on. And they have a guy with a speaker. This is like 4:30 in the morning. They're blowing up the floats. And the guy says, if you're a clown 817, I look at my thing. Oh, I'm 817. You will be marching with the McDonald's marching all-star band, and your celebrity will be Andrew McArdle. So that means we get in front of the band, and then Andrew McArdle comes along. So she's on this float. She's like, you know, 15, 30 feet in the air, waving to everybody. I was like, Andrew McArdle? Oh my God.
Yeah.
So I spend the entire 3 mile parade running back and I'd look up at her. I'm like, Andrea, I'm like, look up at her. And she's looking down at me and I'm like, fuck you. Andrea, fuck you, you fucking bitch. I'm dressed as a clown. She's looking at me like,
she doesn't know who you are, right?
I'm like, yeah, it's me, you fucker. And I tormented her. I tormented her for the entire parade. I ruined her parade.
Oh, man.
I was like, every time she was sort of settling in, I would run back and I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm
and I heard that I can tell you exactly where I was. I was by the exit of, it was the number 7 exit, headed past. Renton and you know the landing and all that. And when I heard that story, I actually pulled over because I laughed so hard. And I'm sorry, I thought I thought it was Jennifer Aniston, but either way, I laughed so hard because I went, I could only imagine that individual looking down at a clown, the red shoes, the nose, the whole bit.
The nose.
What the hell is going on here?
Oh yeah, why is that clown so mad at me? And then we called her agent, like. We called her agent a couple of years ago, and her agent was like, Ed, why do you want to get her on the phone? I said, I want to let her know that was me. And he goes, I don't see any benefit for Andrea for that. But I still to this day,
Sean,
I'd love to talk to her and say, I was that clown. I was that clown.
Oh, dude, that's so awesome.
Good.
But, John, this is a perfect example of why, you know, your show, the John Curley Show at 97.3 is just so fantastic. And it really, I think, keeps people sane when they're stuck in this barrage of nasty traffic and the political climate that we're in and all this kind of thing. And, John, I can't thank you enough for giving me a few moments of your time today because, you know, I'm just barely entering into this world with this podcast thing, and the fact that you'd give me some of your time is thank you so much. It's very gracious of you.
Sean, I have been a fan of yours since the first time you and I talked on the phone, and I've tried to help you as best I can, and I know I failed a number of times, and there's a story off air that's more interesting than anything we just talked about that involves you, but and we're not going to talk about that. I'll let everybody know that they should watch, they should get on Rumble, they should follow you there, because it's voices that that need to be heard by everybody. So thanks for letting me on.
John, it means a lot coming from you. Thank you so much.
Okay. See you. Bye, Sean. Happy New Year.
You too now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening to The Ground Level. That was a lot of fun yesterday having a great interview with John Curley. Again, he's from The John Curley Show at 97.3 Cairo in Seattle. Please check him out. He's every day, Monday through Friday, from 3 to 7. And it's just a great show. You're going to hear a ton of great stories. Everybody, we're right into 2026, day one. Happy New Year's to everyone. And please, again, check us out at rumble.com and The Ground Level, Spotify, Apple, basically everywhere you get your podcasts. And we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks, everybody.